This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. It's 9 o'clock hour on a Thursday, which means it's time for the MGO Ball Roundtable, which is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios. You know what we do every single Thursday, 9 o'clock hour. We have what we call the MGO Blog Roundtable. First of all, from MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Sitting next to him, and they have not argued, not even come close to arguing.
We never argue. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Ed Fang from the Power Rank. And Ed, I guess you have a podcast that you're
Got a new podcast called Pure Bracket Wisdom. So it's a 10-part daily series to get you ready to win your pool. It's 10 minutes every day. Did an episode on Michigan, talked about their transition over the last 2 years and just how different this team is than the team that won the Big Ten Conference tournament 2 years ago. So it's been a lot of fun. The goal is to get everyone ready for their bracket and pool and the simple strategies you can use to win.
All right. And joining us from Hawaii, you know, he went out. Look, every time the weather kind of gets a little cold, he goes out. Sees the Pacific Ocean and hangs out in Hawaii. Wakes up early in the morning to spend time with us talking about Craig Ross. Craig, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. It's an hour earlier than usual, or an hour earlier than last week at least. So it's
just don't go
challenging.
To sleep.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I think I have a tennis game at 8. So
you're a night owl anyway, right? So
yeah, I tend to be a night
person. Stay up.
All right. Well, guys, let's before we get into talking about the Big Ten tournament, let's just start off first getting your thoughts on the loss to Michigan State. Obviously, the Spartans in beating Michigan won a share of the Big Ten regular season crown. It was a tremendous second half by Cassius Winston, but you know, as in the process of giving him credit for his performance. I just feel like, man, Michigan's biggest problem in this matchup, in that game anyway, has been what Xavier Tillman was able to do to them on both ends of the floor. The defense, his ability to switch on Michigan's guards and not get beaten. And then the factor that he's been offensively from start to finish, he was a tough cover for Michigan. And to me, the difference for Michigan State, surprising that, you know, you can have an injury and be a better team, find out you're a better team as a result of it.
I mean, I've been saying that since Ward went out and before it. Like, he's a better player because he's a diverse modern five. And he's a guy who reminded me of Isaiah Roby last year when they absolutely annihilated Michigan, and Michigan was trying to drive the five when they switched, and Roby was just eating it up. And same thing with Tillman.
Yeah.
Well, and you look at that roster, I think he's got the best prospects for an NBA career. Anyone on that team.
It is strange.
He's got an NBA body. I mean, we've seen what he can do.
Like, I was watching the Indiana game, and for Romeo Langford to be, like, a big-time prospect and for Cassius Winston to be like, nobody cares about that guy was just mind-blowing.
But you can get why no one cares about Winston as a prospect, right? You can see that. He's going to have a long career somewhere in Europe or wherever. He's going to make a lot of money.
But it's just like when you're watching the game, you're like, are we sure about this?
Well, no, and I think there's a lot of things to be said about Langford. But in terms of that game, the main one thing that sticks out to me is that Michigan State shot 63% from two. There's a lot of slop in there, obviously. The one that Simpson blocked but still went in for Winston and a couple other shots there. But You know, I mean, tip your cap to them. That's the one thing that Michigan State's done all year is been pretty good at two-point field goal offense. I look at their percentage and I adjust for who they play. They're fifth in the nation. And to get it done against a defense as good as Michigan's, you know, I mean, this is not a super talented team, and they're just getting it done.
Yeah, much like I said in the game here, you know, there are moments where you feel like there's an opportunity to really put your foot on the throat of the opponent. You know, here it was in the second half of the game, Iggy gets that dunk, forces a timeout. You think Michigan is going to really assert itself at that point, and they go and have five just terrible minutes, you know, where they kind of did it to themselves. And I kind of felt that way toward the end of the first half when they're up 12. Cassius Winston's on the bench. Xavier Tillman's on the bench.
Well, who else is on the bench? Livers is on the bench. Charles Matthews is on the bench.
But
Iggy's on the bench.
True. But you have X on the court. You have Jordan Poole on the floor. And you're up 12. And they're countering. I'm trying to remember. I think it was Foster Lawyer.
Aaron's was on the court.
It was a unit where you felt like, well, at the very least, they're going to still be up 12. You know, at the end of the half, and they were able to cut that lead in half because of shot selection for Michigan. You know, a couple of, you know, I think John Beilein would say shots that were ill-advised and a turnover. Meanwhile, on the other side, you had two dunks and a layup, two blown coverages, transition layup, and those were big moments.
And those were all three Brandon Johns. And Brandon Johns is playing center for all year, so when you're playing with the four, of course he's going to mess up his assignments. But I mean, it's never going to change, but the auto bench stuff really cost Michigan in this game. And the thing about it is, you know, Iggy fouls out in 22 minutes. But by benching him in the first half, you didn't actually extend his playing time. You just moved it later in the game. And all the minutes have the same basket, and the points are worth the same. It's not rock and jock. So to me, like, if I have both those guys who are sitting on the bench, I'm going to play one of them because I can't play Johns at a position he hasn't played all year.
So you don't put, and I guess, and Craig, I want you to pick up here, but yeah. Michigan State did the auto bench too. I mean, Cassius Winston was on the bench.
I was like, this is a gift from God. And
I mean, that hurt them too, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the auto bench
didn't hurt them in that moment.
Well, it's because they're playing like Brooks and Johns and like this. A lot of weird guys played in this game.
The auto bench is the next evolution in coaches adopting analytics and
I mean, Livers finishes the game with two fouls. Like, and you don't have Charles Matthews. If you have Charles Matthews, then he's on the floor in that juncture. I mean, you've got some guys who, like, and Brooks did some work in the first half and stuff like that, but you just can't expect to get away with it like that.
So these were the lineups for Michigan. For Michigan, to your point, it was X, Eli Brooks, Jordan Poole, Brandon Johns, and Colin Castleton. That was Michigan's lineup. Michigan State's lineup was Foster Lawyer, Aaron Henry, Kyle Aarons, Kenny Goins, and Thomas Kithier. So it's like, dude, at the very least, you're expecting to double digits.
Well, sure, but double digits. Also, you have the opportunity to put Livers out there and improve your odds even more because, like, most of the defensive breakdowns there were just because Johns didn't know what he was doing. And, like, I assume that you'd be able to see that in practice because the guy, again, it's been a five most of the year. So, like, you're putting him out there with Castleton, with Eli Brooks, and that's like, all right, yeah, they don't have Winston, but you're playing a lineup you've never played all year. So it's never going to change. Well, it's never, ever, ever going to change.
Wow.
Not for John Beilein. Maybe like Patrick Beilein.
John Beilein has been able to evolve drastically since.
This is never going to change because it was never based on anything rational. He has the teams that have the lowest foul rate in the country, and he's been doing this for 11 years. So it's never going to change. And whenever there's that foul, I'm just like, all right, well, here we go.
Well, we didn't run guys off the three-point line 4 years ago, and that's changed drastically.
Well,
I mean, John Beilein has made a career out of evolving.
So this is clearly something that is not something that he has the power to change. Otherwise, he would already have changed it.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, it's not based on anything rational.
Well, his view, I've heard him talk about this before. Wait, first of all, Craig, I know you've been looking to get in. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think you guys picked the relevant spot of the game to look at. I mean, it's 35-23 with 2:40 left in the first half, and Michigan has the ball after getting a stop. in both teams have these, quote, weird lineups. And UM's win probability at that moment is 76%. And at that point, it isn't just, you know, the subs. I mean, at that point, Michigan has the ball in the half court, and Castleton is has switched on to Castleton. Now, I like the ball in Castleton's hands 2 feet from the basket with Lawyer checking him. And that was Poole. It's a pass I could have made. And instead, they don't make the pass, and X then takes a poor three. Then on the other end, Castleton and Johns both guard either no one or the same guy, and Kithier gets an uncontested layup. So now it's 35-25 at 218, and we stand around on offense for about 20 seconds. Poole finally takes a poor shot. They get a run out, and Poole doesn't play any defense on the run out, and in Poole's defense, Aarons takes somewhere between 4 and 17 steps and gets a layup for 35-27. And then for some unknown reason, X throws the ball into the stands. And then we blow again. I think this is a miscommunication on the Michigan defense with the big guys, and we blow a ball screen, and it's now 35-29. And in those 2 minutes, we took a game that was a 76 win probability to about a 50-50 game at half. And that really was, now we were leading 48-40 in the other blown tire part of the game. I'm surprised that no one has talked about the officiating, so I guess I'll whine about it a little bit, because Beilein actually whined about it in his press conference. So I decided I would check all 140 box scores in the Big Ten this year.
Wow.
And the good news is that 80% plus of those box scores show that free throws are within 10. So the Big Ten is trying to make some effort, I think, to allow road teams a chance to win. I've been saying that for a while, and that's a good thing. The bad news is that on the outlier games, Michigan was on the bad side. There's probably about 10 to 14 of them, and maybe 13. Michigan was on the bad side of three of those. And there were only four games in the year where free throw differential was greater than 19. And this one was 23, which was the biggest free throw differential of any game in the Big Ten this year. So in 140 box scores, this is the number one outlier. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, Beilein said that going in that his goal was to limit their threes. They only made six threes. I'll footnote that. One of them was a brick banked in. But they got to the foul line like crazy. They had subs, I guess. We don't foul, and somehow we got in big foul trouble today. And then he Izzo's it with a passive-aggressive finish. Blame me for that. So, you know, the State only scored 52 points from the floor. And that's with this, I think Ed pointed out, one block two that went in and a bank three that went in. So even though Michigan had some problems on defense in these two stretches, I think the game really maybe was more of an offensive loss than a defensive loss. Those are my primary thoughts about this debacle in the event.
Yeah, you know, Beilein is always one to be, deferential to the officials when it comes to the difficulty of their jobs. He does not lean on them like a lot of coaches do. This was different. I don't know if you guys heard him on the show yesterday, but it was very clear. It was very clear in talking to him that, yeah, man, he felt like his team got a raw deal in the game. You talk about a foul disparity for a team that, as a matter of, I mean, they are a team it's religious for them to not foul. And in this game, it's just the disparity is that great. It was galling. And two calls that we were talking about here, and I'm curious, each of you guys, Brian and I were talking about, I'm curious what you guys thought. The non-and-one for Teske that should have been, and it would have been a foul on Winston, I believe. And then
he got shoved from under the basket.
Right, yeah. And then the Foster Lawyer fallback foul that should have been a travel. those calls were just so glaring. And one of the things that Dockett said during the game, he said his observation was, well, Izzo is intimidating. He didn't say that word, but he's influencing the refs. And I'm curious if you guys really think there's something to that.
Well, it's hard to argue otherwise when you have a 28-7 foul disparity. The last two were intentional.
Correct.
I mean, not foul, a free throw disparity. And some of the calls that are getting made are just absolutely absurd. So, like, Iggy second, which is a huge pivotal call, Winston initiates the contact. He's an on-ball offender. That's supposed to be something you let go. That's supposed to be verticality, and we've seen this time and again this season. And because it's Winston, he gets the call. And literally, if you breathe on Foster Lawyer, it's... And then, Iggy's fourth is a loose ball foul where he's jumping up and trying to bat the ball, and he doesn't, and it goes to a Michigan State player. That's not a call that you ever have to make. Because whatever Iggy did, and he didn't actually do anything, it didn't change the... It didn't impact the game. So to make that call is because you're trying to affect the outcome. I mean, there's no reason in the world to do that. So it's pretty frustrating because when, it's such common knowledge that Dan Dockett is just talking about on national television about how the officiating is completely unbalanced, that's a tough one to swallow because this is a program that has one of the top five foul rates in the country.
And so it boils down to, and this is one of my takeaways from listening to John in our conversation. Now, he didn't say this. There's no inside information, so I don't want to, this is just my opinion. But listening to them talk, I feel like if this happens again, if that matchup manifests in the Big Ten championship,
which it should,
that I think the disparity between approaches with officials won't be nearly as great. Now, he'll never be a wailing banshee like Izzo. But do I think that it will be, a little more, terse, a little more aggressive? His dealings with the officials, the lobbying, because this is essentially what it is. You're lobbying the officials for calls. For some reason, Izzo's approach is effective. Maybe it's a combination of his success, his status, and his approach. Because, Brad Underwood, I guess, doesn't get calls like that. Fred McCaffrey doesn't always get calls like that, although they got calls when Michigan was there.
Is it just whining about the refs and against Indiana or something?
And so it worked for him, and I think
I don't know if it worked for him, right? I mean, refs are bad. And if you thought going into East Lansing that Michigan was going to get the calls, you're nuts.
No, that's not, but saying that you.
And to think that
that's
was,
not what anyone's saying, though. It ain't saying you think Michigan's going to get the calls. You just don't think that they're going to get all the calls.
No.
That Michigan State's going to get all the calls.
If you think it's a shock how bad the refs were up there, I think you're a little nuts. I mean, that was one of the things I said coming out. You're going to be fighting the refs up
there
in East Lansing.
That is going to be the largest.
Nobody's shocked.
The largest disparity of the season.
I'm not shocked.
My favorite one is the one where Morgan and Horford have two fouls within 3 minutes. That was my favorite one. That was in the tournament. That was great. I loved that.
I mean, there's nothing you can do about this. You hope you go into some neutral site games now in the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament.
I think what you do is you make it a point to remind the refs that, hey, look, I'm over here too.
Right.
Well, I mean, you got to answer to me, too. And that's not always John, he gets on refs, too. Let's be clear. He gives the refs what for. But in this game, it really felt like they were intimidated. Like they thought Izzo was going to beat him up or something. With some of the calls like that, that lawyer call was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. He got the benefit of that call. Think about who it was. He has X on him. I mean, it'd be different if you halfway understand if it's Dave DeJulius or someone else. But you got freshman Foster Lawyer getting that kind of deference against X, and the guy falls over. That was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And I agree with Brian. This is one of those things where, man, something has compelled you to look at this favor in Michigan State's favor And that was a call that, to me, was indicative of that. So.
Yeah, Sam, I mean, the other thing is, if you want to look at it from a smaller micro view of what actually happened, I mean, in the first 6 minutes of the game, there's two fouls called on Michigan, none on MSU. All good, no problem. And then the first call, a little over 6 minutes in against MSU in the game, is a travel on Winston by Oglesby right in front of his own. I mean, if you travel, the call was by Terry Oglesby, and it was a travel by Winston right in front of Izzo. It's probably the right call, and Izzo goes berserk. He just goes crazy, and he runs down the court, and he's in Oglesby's face. What does Oglesby do? Immediately makes a fake
sure
call
does.
On Livers.
He sure does.
And I mean, right away. And so it's, you know, it's hard not to think that Dakich isn't right. And I know I've had people tell me, well, you're just laying it on the officials. Well, I'm not, because Michigan still had a legitimate chance to win this game, and they did it to themselves. But look at the two games. In the two Michigan-MSU games, MSU was plus 33 free throws, where the average differential, I'll calculate it at some point in the offseason, is probably, you know, four or five free throws a game. And you're looking at plus 33 in this. And if you look at the two MSU-Indiana games, MSU is actually minus five free throws in those two losses. So change two games, 38 free throws, that's a difference. That, you know, and it's not something you can just sort of slot, you know, pass off as, you know, not really a part of the game. Because it really was.
He looked at 100 box scores. Did he say he looked at
100? I looked at 140 box scores.
He didn't even think to call me and be like, Ed, can you write code to do this? Just went through and did it.
Craig Ross.
That's what Craig Ross does.
All right. Look, folks, we need to get to a break. Enough for talking about that Michigan State game. We got to.
Craig, you used to get through 5,000 box scores. That's how many college basketball teams have been.
BartTorvik.com will list all the free throws in every game. You don't have to look at the box scores individually.
Is that right?
BartTorvik.com.
There you go.
He said, now you tell
me. Be easier. Yeah.
All right, we got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA. Online at WTKA.com, the MGO blog roundtable. So we put that Michigan State game to bed. Now it's Big Ten tournament time. Big Ten tournament action got underway last night as Nebraska, Tim Miles. You see his celebration running down the tunnel? You guys check that out?
No.
He did a slip and slide down the tunnel.
Wait, who did?
Tim Miles.
Oh, yeah.
Slip and slide?
Yeah, he went sliding down the tunnel. Not purposefully, but...
Oh. It was like Chad Henne after that Michigan State game that one time where he was exiting the field and he bit it.
He can forget about his buyout for one more day. Coach one more game.
Yep.
He's only got three more to the tourney.
And so, you know, they won last night. I don't think he was expecting to win that game. And then, of course, Illinois took out Northwestern. So, as we look at the tournament bracket, it was my take, guys, that, you know, there's no such thing as a good draw, but, you know, compared to being on the upper half of the bracket, I thought Michigan got a better draw than Michigan State did, I thought.
I think so. I mean, I think you want to avenge the Iowa loss, and that's probably who you're going to play in that first game.
I think Iowa's Purdue. A bad matchup, though, for Michigan, because, like, their biggest weakness is that Luka Garza is the worst post defender in the league and possibly the world. And they play a lot of zone, which Michigan's not good at. So their weaknesses are not really something that Michigan excels at attacking. So we saw that kind of last year when they went to the overtime in the tourney.
So you would like matching up with Wisconsin better than matching up with Iowa?
Well, I mean, they're like the sixth seed for a reason. So I'm hoping that Illinois makes it through, is I guess what mm-hmm. I'm saying. So, like, Illinois doesn't pose the kind of problems that Iowa often does. They're very turnover dependent, and Michigan doesn't turn the ball over. So, you know, I feel like, you know, there's a big difference between the six and the nine.
So what do you? I mean, Iowa is clearly a team, as you guys know, following the Big Ten. They've been reeling. I mean, part of it was the suspension of Fran McCaffrey, but man, they don't look right now like the team they were when they beat Michigan earlier in the year.
No, and a couple of those wins that they had were like last-second crazy buzzer beaters, especially the Rutgers one. So they might be a little bit of a paper tiger, but Michigan has just struggled against Iowa for a couple of years now. And that's they're probably a objectively worse team than Wisconsin, but you know Michigan, outside of the Troll Center, I think will handle Wisconsin. Iowa, they'll probably handle them too. I'm just a little bit more nervous than I would be for a team with that profile.
But it's an interesting game, Illinois and Iowa. What do you guys make? What do you guys think of the Illinois-Iowa matchup? Starting with you, Craig.
Toss up. That game could go either way. I agree with Brian, and that I'd rather play Illinois than Iowa. Although Iowa, really, I mean, they've lost what six of their last seven games. And the only win they've got is at home against Indiana in overtime. And they actually got crushed by Ohio State by 20. And then they got beat by Rutgers by 15, lost to Wisconsin by 20, and then they lost. But, yeah, I think it's a toss-up. I guess I tend to lean slightly towards Illinois in this game, but Illinois is more likely than not to win. I think they're more athletic, have better coaching. And I prefer that matchup to the Iowa matchup.
All right, Penn State, Minnesota.
I mean, a really big game for Minnesota because they are on the bubble and there's already been a bid thief in St. Mary's, so bubble's one smaller and it's going to get smaller. So I think they would really, really like to win this. And Penn State, I mean, they're probably going to show up and be like, yeah, we're good now. And I don't know if that's going to be enough because, you know, Jordan Murphy versus Lamar Stevens. Stevens probably isn't going to be able to get into the post against Murphy, so he's going to be taking his long twos, and he's not very efficient at that.
Yeah, I mean, my numbers actually like Penn State more than Minnesota, so they're they should be the favorite in that game. And Minnesota, I mean, they just give me pain in my life watching them play basketball. So, oh, I mean, maybe not as much as some other teams in the Big Ten, but I find them difficult to watch.
And doesn't Minnesota have to win this game? I mean, if they lose, they're 19-14, losing, let's see, 4, 7, 8 of their last 11.
Yeah,
and
I think they would be well advised to win.
I mean, they're listed as a 10 seed on Bracket Matrix, so it seems like they have a little bit of leeway.
All right. Maryland and the Nebraska team that I think is surprised to be there.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska has six scholarship players. They're playing a guy named Trueblood. They're going to lose by a lot.
All right. And the game, so do you guys, as some people have been calling Indiana, Ohio State, a play-in game? What do you make of that matchup? And anyone know anything about Caleb Wilson?
Someone tell me, like, why Indiana's still on the bubble. Like, did they lose, like, eight consecutive games?
Yeah, they have two wins over Michigan State. They beat Marquette. They beat Louisville.
Right.
They have the best set of wins of anyone in the bubble. They just lost every other game in the Big Ten. So it is a conundrum. Like, honestly, if I was the committee, I'm putting them in the first four with a team like UNC Greensboro that has a big like win loss record but hasn't played anybody.
Well, give them a St. Mary's, man. I mean, how fun would that be?
Well, I'm just you throw them in the first four, and then they're in the first four, then they can't play an auto bid. That's not a 16 seed. So they'd have to get an at-large. But that's what I would do the first four every year. Is it some major team that has a good resume but a bad record versus a mid-major with a great record? Every year.
Like a Belmont.
Yes.
Indiana Belmont.
I haven't heard any updates on Caleb Wesson. Any idea?
I heard he was supposed to play. I saw that flash.
If he wasn't out for the year, then he's got to play now because like their bid is flashing before their eyes. Not like anyone wants to see Ohio State in the tournament because they, I mean, more than Minnesota, they're the worst team to watch in the Big Ten. Like, Rutgers is scrappy, and Geo Baker throws up terrible shots and occasionally makes them. Ohio State is a miserable watch. So,
yeah, I agree with that. The Indiana one is the one that's really intriguing to me because they actually lost 12 of 13 games in a stretch.
Right, like
there.
How are you still on the bubble when you lose 12? Like that's got to be some kind of record.
Bubble. Says something about the bubble. This
right.
No, I mean it says that this is the strangest minute in Indiana. I mean they have a season sweep over Michigan State, which is going to be a one or a two seed. So like, that really wakes you up. It's like, all right, well, this team has done some stuff.
And that's who, obviously, they play if they beat Ohio State. And that's the first, I believe, yeah, Indiana, Ohio State's first game of the day. So you win that game and you get Michigan State, Indiana for the third time.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, man, Michigan State's got to be so motivated to
Indiana
play that game.
By 50. Like, yeah. It's not even going to be close.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Wait, is that really what you think, Craig? He did say Indiana by 50.
Well, I was exaggerating.
No, well, not 50, but I think Indiana will win the game. I think Michigan State will win the game.
Oh, that's a little bit different than Indiana by 50.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, no, Michigan State will win that game, assuming that Indiana, can beat Ohio State, which I think they probably should. But Indiana is so strange that it's really hard. They're really hard to figure out how they could have that run. And in fact, in that 13-game run, the one game they won was overtime. So it could have easily been a 13-game losing streak, and we're talking about them being.
Oh, they also won at Wisconsin. Like if you were just to look at their best wins and not look at their record, they'd be like a 6 seed.
I mean, have you guys seen some of their later games? Because when they were losing, I felt like Jerron Morgan looked uninterested, which is weird for kind of a senior captain leader. So I presume he's been playing better. And
I mean,
they're kind of
The Michigan State game, they got Justin Smith to go off, which is weird because he's Brent Petway and he's like knocking down threes, and they have 15 points halfway through the first half and he has 13 of them. And I'm like, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, neither is. Though. That's one of the developments he was going nuts about. This guy's hitting threes.
Yeah, four threes all year.
Right.
So, but
come
yeah.
play for me. I'm happy.
That would be the, the quarterfinal matchup. Excuse me, the semifinal matchup. If Indiana was able to win. Meanwhile, Michigan on the bottom half, you guys have them advancing to take on Purdue or Penn State. You think they win? You think they beat either Iowa or Illinois?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So then you take on probably Purdue.
Yep.
So what about the Michigan-Purdue rematch?
Well, Purdue is a completely different team than they were in November. So they've gotten Harms to really emerge. Grady Eifert is the top O-rated guy in the country with 10% usage, but still. and Ryan Klein, if there's a better guy at making total garbage shots in the country, I haven't seen him. Like, he's shooting 42% for two, and every time he's curling off a screen, it looks like he's going to fall down when he shoots. It's it's uncanny.
Yeah, he likes to fall away on his shot.
And it's crazy, and it goes in every time. And then Trevion Williams has kind of emerged as a backup five, and he's a guy who can really do some work down low. Probably not against Teske, but like that backup matchup, like Castleton versus that guy who's 280, that might not go that well.
Right.
I might actually try to get Castleton out some minutes against Harms, but they're a much more complete team than they were when Carson Edwards was just having to shoot them in and out of games. But Carson Edwards was flat out terrible against the tourney locks in the Big Ten. Like, we're talking like 52 O ratings, 82 O ratings. You know, he's got 22 points, but he's taken 65 shots to get those points. So he could easily shoot them out of this game. He could easily shoot them out of any game that they're in. So I think that's
my point. And you like the chances when Xavier Simpson's guarding them.
Well, and I feel like, Purdue is a better team now when Carson Edwards has lower usage.
Like, in that Minnesota game that we were watching so intently, he was 7-for-31 from the field, 3-for-15 from three. Yeah. And the thing that was jumping out to me, Klein and Eifert were hitting that game.
Yeah.
It was like, man, pass the ball. You have to be saying that if you're a bad painter. And that dude, he just has no conscience when it comes to
Eifert's a guy who needs to be open, but Klein does not need to be open. Like, you need to shift some of those 15 threes to Klein, because he can come off screens like Rip Hamilton. And Dakota Mathias last year, he was one of those guys, like, when they had Haas, where it was just, three-point shooters around an ogre. And, they need to balance out their usage more if they want to go on a run of the tourney. And I think they can now. It's just that, Edwards got so used to playing the way that they had to play in the first half of the year that he's unable to devolve that.
Yeah, I mean, their defense has gotten a lot better. They were as low as 50 earlier. They're up to 33rd in the nation when I look at points per possession adjusted for schedule. So they're better on that side. I still like the matchup Michigan over Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, there can't be a worse stretch Then his two-game stretch, you know, at Indiana and at Nebraska, he was 1-for-20 from three. 1-for-20 from three.
That's because he's pulling up 4 feet behind the line with a hand in his face, right?
It's like, dude, at some point, stop freaking shooting threes.
No. Not against Michigan. Let the man shoot. Let Carson be Carson.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, folks, we got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side, close things out. Here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. And we are back, folks, here. MGO Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. Here on the Michigan Insider, Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub. We have the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. Brian Cook from MGO Blog. We have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. And we have Ed from Hawaii joining us talking Big Ten tournament. So as we went to the break, we were talking about Michigan, Purdue being a different basketball team, Carson Edwards. Does Michigan win that matchup?
I mean, probably. I mean, if Edwards has the kind of game he has against Minnesota, I would say yes. But he is a guy who can go off.
Yeah, I think they win that game.
Craig Ross.
He probably fell asleep.
Yeah, he fell asleep. Told the guy to stay up all night, man. So, he's got to try to get some sleep before
the
show.
I guess, you know, one of the most intriguing matchups going to the top of the bracket, Maryland versus Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be two posts for both teams, which is kind of unusual. Although Rivers can act as a stretch four, but like defensively, you know, I think he's a decent matchup for Fernando, and you can kind of shelter Hap from Fernando and let him go to work on the offensive end. And, you know, Hap is a guy who can get around Fernando and with his crafty various moves and, you know, get it up at the bucket. So, but they're going to have someone else chip in. Like, Trice has completely fallen off. He was super hot at the beginning of the year, but he's got like a 95 O rating in Big Ten play, which is pretty, pretty bad. And, you know, they're going to need someone to chip in. And I don't know if they've actually got that guy.
So you would pick Maryland in that game?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, the numbers are like Wisconsin. I mean, I think Maryland probably, you can make the argument they're a better team.
Craig Ross?
I like Wisconsin if that game happens. I think Wisconsin will win that game. I also like Michigan against Purdue, but Purdue is a different team than what we played back in December, primarily because of Travion Williams, who really didn't play in that game. And when he started playing, all of a sudden Harm started playing better, and so I think they're a greater challenge now than they were back then. And, you know, Edwards is always, he's always a force to deal with. He gets hot, you got a problem. But I like Michigan in the game, and I like Wisconsin over Maryland.
All right, and did you guys, we didn't pick Michigan State versus likely Indiana. Who would win that game?
I did.
Craig was Michigan State. Michigan State. All right, so, but you picked Indiana.
By 50.
All right, so Michigan versus Michigan State. Michigan State or Indiana versus Wisconsin or Maryland? Who comes out the top half of the bracket?
Indiana by 22.
Ed Fang, who comes out of the top half?
You got to go with Michigan State.
Michigan and Craig?
Yeah.
You got Michigan State.
Michigan State, certainly. Michigan State is a near lock, I would say, to make it into the final game.
Guys, all right, so
I don't know about near lock.
So you two have Michigan State rematching in the final, and Brian, you have Michigan and
Indiana.
And who wins the Big Ten?
I would love to see
who
Indiana
wins the Big
again.
Ten championship.
Indiana by 60.
Michigan State. I'm afraid to say that I think Michigan State will win again.
So you know,
and
Izzo hasn't been to the Sweet 16 in 3 years.
I do.
I do too.
I'm aware.
He made it to the Final Four as a 7 seed in 2016. Hadn't been to the Sweet 16 since.
You know, I think this is his best. I mean, a lot of people have said this, but I think it's true. I think that this is probably his best coaching job.
Yeah, I would.
That to some extent, you know, he's been fortunate against Michigan because I do think Tillman. I mean, I didn't mention Brian last year had said he thought Tillman was you know, a better player for that team than Ward. And I certainly think Tillman's a better player against Michigan than Ward. And I think he was prescient on that one. And I do. And so maybe Izzo was a bit lucky on his hand being forced on the Ward injury, however that happened. And so, but I think Michigan State has done a really nice job this year. I think Winston deserves to be the player of the year in the Big Ten, and Tillman has played really well. So congrats to them. They've put it together this year with what seems like a little less talent than what they had last couple of years.
There's definitely less talent. And I think that's kind of the point. He does better with teams like this. I think this team is more his personality.
Right.
Tom Izzo.
Stop recruiting these guys, these lottery picks, man.
He's kind of made that point in the past, but the offense focused on Cassius Winston, and you have being belligerent with him, and John Beilein's like, man, you come down some plays or some possessions, you gotta have four or five ball screens in the same possession. They weren't doing that last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder to guard, especially when you have a capable five like Brian. I agree with Craig. It was a prescient call to say that this dude is better for them than
Nick Ward's Nick back. Ward. So does that change any of your predictions, Brian Cook?
He comes.
No,
off
I
the
already
bench.
Have Indiana
oh,
by
already
50.
Have Indiana, yeah, he comes what off about the 60? Bench. Can we get Indiana
no,
by 60?
No, I already took that into account.
Okay, gotcha.
He's a role player. You come in when Xavier Tillman needs a blow, kind of deal, or he gets in foul trouble.
That's not gonna happen.
He takes
Thomas Kithier's minutes. It's a Xavier Tillman show. I mean, if you want to win,
if
you want to win, that's what you do.
Well,
so
do you keep Isaiah Livers in the starting lineup for Michigan too?
That's they're debating. John Beilein was pretty open about that. He said, so what do you do? We'll see how he does in practice, but do you keep the starting lineup the same and bring Charles off the bench?
Yes.
Why? I mean,
no.
Because Livers gives you a lot more on offense, and he's not much of a downgrade on defense. That's why. You're a better team with Livers in the lineup.
I mean, Livers doesn't get his own shots, and that's kind of a problem.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
He needs to shoot. He needs to get
you
open.
You guys wait until 30 seconds to go in the show to argue? I mean, that's
no,
like,
we argued before.
Oh, okay.
And you're talking about a guy who really only gets shots that are put up by, that are created by the people. And this is a team that needs people to create shots. So,
before we go, Jake in Ann Arbor, what's up, man? Got to make it quick.
I am freaking pumped out. We are one freaking day to the Big Ten tournament game, 170 freaking days till the first game of the football season. When I say go, you say blue. Go!
Blue!
Go!
Blue!
Go!
Blue!
It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine. It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine. I'll hang up and listen. Go blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen. Go blue.
Appreciate you as always, Jake. That's a way to end. Hey, Craig, are you going to be able to get some sleep before your tennis match or lesson?
That's the plan.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Get some sleep, man. We got to get out of here.
Better than